Genesis 31. Now Yaakov heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Yaakov has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, he has made all his wealth. Yaakov saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. Then the Lord said to Yaakov, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. So Yaakov said to Rachel and to Leah, to his flock in the field, and said to them, I see your father's attitude, that it is not friendly toward me as formerly, but the Lord of my father has been with me. You know that I have served my father with all my strength. Yet your fathers cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. And he spoke thus, the speckled shall be your wages. Then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the striped shall be your wages. Then all the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. And it came about at the time when the flock was mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in a dream, Yaakov, and I said, here I am. He said, now lift up your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled. For I have seen that all Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. Rachel and Leah said to him, do we still have any portion of inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and has also entirely consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. Then Yaakov arose and put his children and his wives upon camels, and he drove away all his livestock and all his property which he had gathered, his acquired livestock which he had gathered in Padan Aram, to go to the land of Canaan to his father Yitzhak. Then Laban had gone to shear his flock, and Rachel stole the household gods that were her father's. Yaakov deceived Laban the Aramean by not telling him that he was fleeing. So he fled with all he had, and he rose and crossed the Euphrates River, and set his face toward the hill country of Gilead. When it was told Laban on the third day that Yaakov had fled, then he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him a distance of 7 days' journey, and he overtook him in the hill country of Gilead. God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream of the night and said to him, be careful that you do not speak to Yaakov either good or bad. Laban caught up with Yaakov. Now Yaakov had pitched his tents in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen camped in the hill country of Gilead. Then Laban said to Yaakov, what have you done by deceiving me and carrying away my daughters like captives of the sword? Why did you flee secretly and deceive me and did not tell me that I might have sent you away with joy and with songs, with timbrel and lyre, and did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters? Now you have done foolishly. It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, be careful not to speak either good or bad to Yaakov. Now you have indeed gone away because you long greatly for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods? Then Yaakov replied to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I thought that you would take your daughters from me by force. The one with whom you find your gods shall not live. In the presence of our kinsmen, point out what is yours among my belongings and take it for yourself." For Yaakov did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So Laban went into Yaakov's tent, and into Leah's tent, and to the tent of the two maids, but he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household gods and put them in the camel's saddle, and she sat on them. And Laban felt through all the tent, but he did not find them. She said to her father, "Let not my lord be angry that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is upon me." So he searched, but did not find the household gods. Then Yaakov became angry and contended with Laban. And Yaakov said to Laban, "What is my transgression? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? Though you have felt through all my goods, what have you found of all the house of all your household goods? Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two. These 20 years I have been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of the flocks. That which was torn of beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. You required it of my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus it was, by day the heat consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Yitzhak had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has been my affliction and the toil of my hands. So he rendered judgment last night." Then Laban replied to Yaakov, "The daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? So now come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." Then Yaakov took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Yaakov said to his kinsmen, "Gather stones." So they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Now Laban called it Yegar Sahaduta, but Yaakov called it Galid. Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me this day." Therefore it was named Galid and Mitzpah. For he said, "May the Lord watch between you and me when we were absent one from another. If you mistreat my daughters, or if you take wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is a witness between you and me." Laban said to Yaakov, "Behold this heap, and behold the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass by this heap to you for harm, and you will not pass by this heap and this pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." So Yaakov swore by the fear of his father Yitzhak. Then Yaakov offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his kinsmen to the meal. And they ate the meal and spent the night on the mountain. Early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. Genesis 32. Now, as Yaakov went on his way, and the angels of God met him, Yaakov said when he saw them, "This is God's camp." So he named this place Mahanaim. Then Yaakov sent messengers before him and his brother Esau into the land of Seir, in the country of Edom. He also commanded them, saying, "Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Yaakov, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen and donkeys and flocks and male and female servants, and I have sent you to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight." The messengers returned to Yaakov, saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and furthermore, he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him." Then Yaakov was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people who were with him, and the flocks, and the herds, and camels, into two companies. For he said, "If Esau comes to one company and attacks it, then the company which is left will escape." Yaakov said, "O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Yitzhak, O Lord, you said to me, 'Return to your country and to your relatives, and I will prosper you.' I am unworthy of all your loving kindness and of all the faithfulness which you have shown to your servant. For with my staff only I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother and from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he will come and attack me and the mothers with the children. For you said, 'I will surely prosper you and make your descendants as the sands of the sea, which is too great to be numbered.' So we spent the night there. Then he selected from what he had with him as a present for his brother Esau, 200 female goats and 20 male goats, 200 ewes and 20 rams, 30 milking camels and their colts, 40 cows and 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 male donkeys. He delivered them into the hands of his servants, eat every drove by itself, and said to his servants, 'Pass on before me and put a space between the droves.' He commanded the one in front, saying, 'When my brother Esau meets you and asks you, saying, "To whom do these belong? And where are you going? And to whom do these animals in front of you belong?" Then you shall say, "These belong to your servant Yaakov. It is a present sent to my lord Esau. And behold, he is behind us." Then he commanded also the second and the third, and also those following the droves, saying, "After this manner you shall speak to Esau when you find him, and you shall say, 'Behold, your servant Yaakov also is behind us. For he said, "I will appease you with the present that goes before me. Then afterward I will see his face. Perhaps he will accept me." So the present passed on before him, and while he himself spent that night in the camp. Now he arose that same night and took his two wives and his two maids and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Yabbok. Then he took them and sent them across the stream, and he sent across whatever he had. Then Yaakov was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh, so the socket of Yaakov's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the dawn is breaking." But he said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Yaakov." He said, "Your name shall no longer be Yaakov, but Yisrael, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Yaakov asked him and said, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask me my name?" And he blessed him there. Then Yaakov named that place Peniel, for he said, I have seen God face to face, yet my life has been preserved. Now the sun rose upon him just as he crossed over Penuel, and he was limping on his thigh. Therefore, to this day, the sons of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip which is on the socket of the thigh, because he touched the socket of Yaakov's thigh and the sinew of the hip.
Any ideas, thoughts, questions? Ellie.
I think it's funny that, or unique, that Rachel had the idols and she sits on them, and knowing that there is a death penalty for that, Jacob spoke over her. And we were just talking a little while ago about words that come out of our mouth in the form of curses. And sometimes we don't even see a curse that comes out of our mouth, but if it does not fall on the person intended, scripturally it comes back on us. And that curse that he put on whoever took them later took Rachel's life in childbirth. And what did she say? She said, "The way of woman is with me, and I can't get up." And that's how she died.
You're ahead of the game, but yes, so we are not there at that particular point.
Also, the fact that she's she's the mother of the Ephraimites, and they also, in a sense, disappeared early.
How long does a curse last?
Until it ends.
Until what?
Until it reaches its completion. When it completed, the curse is ended. What she's asking, what she's telling you, was a curse, which is going to be covered, I think, in the next chapter. We will get to there, right, on the next chapter thereafter. But for all purposes, that when she died, that was the end of it. It ended at her death. It did not pass on beyond that. It didn't go on for generation to generation to generation to generation. It happened to her. Okay? Does that kind of answer your question? A curse is only going to last as long as it is going to fulfill its accomplishment. Now, once I give you a curse, Abraham, now, you're going to be cursed until you're dead. That's the way God looks at it, unless you repent of the whole thing.
Did Yeshua break every curse, or are there different kinds of curses for whatever different...
It will be broken, but not all. All right, we'll get to that later. Oh, we had a question?
What about deliverance? Is that another topic?
That still is delayed until it is time to be delivered. You'll even see this with Jacob. He wasn't delivered at any point in time, and under every time. We'll go back to his beginning.
It is in full force today because I've had it happen. I had received a note from someone that was mad at something that I was doing. And I read it on Thursday. And the next day, he fell off of a scaffolding and ended up in the hospital. And it scared me to death because it was a valid, legitimate curse. It was
right.
Wrong. But it still happens. Those happen all the time, and we don't
I'm not saying don't have. What he asked the question, when is it finished? Does it last forever? It ends when it's completed its task.
That's not what I meant. I meant when Ann said deliverance. Sometimes if we see it fast enough, he has mercy to where what we said doesn't turn out as bad as we said it. But it still happens all over the place. We just are so... not tuned, that we don't see that it falls on us and on others.
Yeah. Raymond?
There is this man, our self-righteous man, Laban, who has been decades after decade deceiving Jacob. But then Jacob had made full his terms to serve and took off, and Laban is just accusing all heavy accusations when he can. So is that because in that culture, the seniority has so much power that can behave that way. That's hard for me to understand.
Backtrack here. I understand your question. Laban had more power. Laban had more power than Jacob did to kill him and to take away everything. He had more people on his side. And we'll get into the reason, if I can, we'll get into the reason why it didn't work. And Laban backed down. Any other further comments? Remember, it all has to do with what God said to Rebecca in the womb. Two were in the womb. And the gatherings of people. Jacob was not a very successful in a gathering people on his side. Other gatherings were greater than him at all times, including, we'll get into the next, the 32nd chapter. Okay, first of all, let's get to chapter 31. You remember what chapter 30 was about, briefly? Okay. Remember the cattle, the ring-neck cattle, or not cattle, sheep and goats and rams, and they outproduced the others. Remember, and David and Jacob had done some things with some three pieces of wood, you know, barked them, stripped them, and they became white. And one of those barks or one of those trees had a fragrancy about it, an odor about it. And when it came to the water in the trough, he had put those sticks there to draw the ones that he wanted. And his group increased, not Laban's. Remember that? And last week, I told you last week that people tried to do the very same thing he did, and it doesn't work. Well, this chapter, I hope, will explain the reason why it didn't work. But he says now, your father, verse 7, has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But Elohim suffered him not to hurt me. Now, 10's an interesting number, right? 10's always an interesting number. When God draws the line 10, he doesn't move the line. We have lines in sand. The sand comes and covers it up. When God draws a line, you can't cover it up. 10's 10, period, point blank. Don't go any farther. It's a very fascinating terminology of 10. But I just want to keep that in mind that now, see, we don't have the history, so we're going to have to, quote, believe, end of quote, Jacob. No reason not to. 10 times he has changed the wages or changed the bargaining chips one way or the other. And he talked about how he can do. And in verse 10, and it came to pass the time that the cattle conceived, and I lifted up my eyes. Pay very, very close attention to this. Lift up my eyes and saw in a dream. Okay, we have a dream again, right? Remember the dreams he had laying on his side, and there was this ladder going up and an angel coming up down. What was on top of the ladder? God was there on top. Elohim, or Yahweh, was there on top. And he said something to him. All right? He said something to Jacob. And he said something very, very important. We'll get there in a minute. And he said, we'll get this word here, verse 11, chapter 31. And the angels of Elohim, I spoke to me in a dream. And Jacob said, here I am. So now we have, there is a dream. And the angel said, lift up your eyes and see. Okay. Now that means lift up your eyes, open them up, and take a look at what's going to be happening. What's going to take place. And what took place. This is not by some clever means that Jacob understood the maneuverability and the underhandedness and the cunningness and the craftiness of getting certain animals to reproduce better than the others. It was revealed to him in a dream what was going to happen. And it was going to be that the rams had leaped upon the cattle or the other smaller animals. The herd with ringed and speckled and gristled. I have seen all that Laban hath done unto you. This is the reason. There's a reason why it increased to Jacob. It didn't increase to Jacob because Jacob was smarter, cleverer, more brilliant, underhanded, swindling, cheating, lying, deception. This is a, here it is. It says, angel or Malach Elohim, an angel of the eternal, going to told him, this, I want you to lift up your eyes and I want you to see what's going to do. So, what did he see? Do you think he saw what God wanted him to do to prove whether or not Jacob really believed what he saw? Yes, he did. He took the three sticks. Did exactly what the dream told him to do. There's nothing mysterious about this. Why did Elohim do this? Why? What did he see? He saw that Laban dealt unto you. He didn't like the way Laban was treating him, teaching him, and cheating him. That's fair. Wait a minute. You say in your thoughts, wait a minute, didn't he cheat his brother? Didn't he cheat and swindle and lie and underhanded him? Didn't he just take away and steal the birthright by a maneuvering of, if you don't take this thing, I'm going to let you die. If you don't give me your birthright, I'm going to let you die to death, starve to death. So we have this thing because we think humans, right? We think on the human level. Because we think of the human level, we think of evilness, deceptiveness, and cunningness, and underhandedness. But what did God say? You remember what he said? And behold, Yahweh stood above it and said, I am Yahweh Elohim of Abraham, your father, and Elohim of Isaac. The land in which you lie, I will give to you and your descendants. Also your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. They shall spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, to the south, and in you and in your seed all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Behold, I am with you and will keep you. You wherever you go, you will and will bring you back to this land, for I have not and I will not leave you until I have done all that I have spoken unto you. That's a promise, right? Now, do you think God was not there and increased Jacob's wealth beyond Jacob's imagination? Yes, he did. How did he do it? Oh, I'm going to tell you, Jacob, I want you to lift up your eyes. I want you to see. This is how I'm going to do it. Now, this is the hand of the Creator, the one on the top of the ladder that said this. So let's give credit where credit's due. It was not underhandedness, sneakiness, cunningness. It was what the Elohim, the Creator of heaven and earth, said, I am going to do because I don't like what Laban did to you. We can say, hey, he swindled, he lied, he cheated, he underhanded. And God says, I don't like what Laban did to you. We accept that as a truth? Okay, it is a truth. Right? I know I've heard so many people try to make Jacob look like he's one of the most wicked, underhanding, and cunning, and conniving peoples that's written in the Bible. And God just overlooked it all. Not looking at God as in charge of the whole thing. Even before they were born, God was in charge of what's going to take place. Now, we'll talk about dreams. One thing I have noticed, we read the Bible, and there are dreams. A lot of people know I have dreams, and I know I step on people's toes, but you have to listen to me for a minute. Every time the Bible talks about a dream, what does that dream do? When a dream is recorded within the Bible, it is very clear to the one who has the dream. It's not unclear. A lot of people have dreams, that God, I had a dream, and God gave a dream, and I think it means this, this means that, but no, it's very, very clear to those who had a dream. Because God does not cloud His message to the person He is going to present information to. God doesn't cover or conceal something that the dreamer, which He, God, has put into the mind and says, this is what I want you to do. There's a little doubt about the clarity of this dream. What was his dream? Lift up your eyes and see. This is going to happen, Jacob. It was very clear to Jacob, wasn't it? It wasn't a mystery. It wasn't a world of, I wonder what he meant. Oh, jeez, how am I going to fill out this dream? I think God wants me to, and worry and sweat. No, he knew exactly where it's coming from. And what did he do? We read this article already. When there was one of Laban's sheep or goat that was attacked, killed, got sick, and died, who paid for it? Jacob paid for it. Jacob reimbursed Laban for it. Anything that he lost, Jacob paid for, and Laban had no idea. Did he? And so now we have a look at this thing. So when we look at Jacob, is he a unhonorable human being, or is he a very honorable person? See, I'm one of these people that stands up for the heroes of the Bible. Yes, they make mistakes. Yes, they may make an error, and they may even sin. So do I. I'm not justifying anything. I'm just telling you the attitude that has hit Jacob, and it makes me upset about Jacob, like it does when people have an attitude about Rachel, have an attitude about Rebecca, have an attitude about Eve. I get a little bit upset. They're not even listening to what is written and paid attention to that the Elohim, the creator of heaven and earth, the Elohim, Elohim, is the one who has instituted it, and this is truth. Plain and simple. If I'm upset today, I'll hold that anger back a little bit. So, it's what he did. Now, he goes on, he tells his wives, Rachel and Leah, and he said, oh, something's going to happen here. And they say, well, you know what? Verse 14, what portion do we have with our father anymore? What did these two women's father do? Spent our inheritance. They're supposed to inherit from their father the things they're supposed to inherit. And what did old daddy do? He spent it all. And they had nothing. Okay? For the riches which Elohim has taken from our father, that is ours, and our children's, now then, whatsoever Elohim has said, go and do, Jacob. Now they are on Jacob's side. They're all backing up on Jacob's side. Now, of course, we know Laban had a 3-day journey again. 3-day separation between the two of them. And now he found out what's going on in verse 24. And he says now, he had a dream. Did you notice that Laban had a dream? Did it make sense that he actually had a dream? Do you think the dream that he had was perfectly clear to him, or was it kind of clouded? Very, very clear to him. And what was his dream? No. Take heed, do not speak. You speak not unto Jacob either good or bad. What's strange, isn't it? Can he speak something good about him? Nope. You speak neither good nor bad. Kind of strange statement, isn't it? Okay, so Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban, his brethren, or his group, pitched in the mount of Gilead. What does Gilead mean? Remember, it was named this because of what took place. You ever wonder why it was called Gilead? It has a very specific meaning. We'll get there in a minute. Keep that in mind. Now, there's certain things that that was passed on to Jacob. You remember what some of those things were? This is what Jacob, this is Isaac said, and give thee the blessings of Abraham to thee and to thy seed with thee, that thou shalt inherit the land wherein thou art a stranger, which Elohim gave unto Abraham. And he said to Abraham, and I will make of thee a great nation. I will bless thee and make and multiply thy great name, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless those that bless you, and I'll curse those that curse you. And in thee all nations of the earth shall be blessed. Wait, did we just read that in the other chapter? Same exact wording. In you, Jacob, all nations will be blessed. So the blessings now is passing on to Jacob. Right? And the angel of Yahweh came unto Abraham a second time. Remember the time he was in heaven? First time was at the mountain, and he was ready to give his sacrifice his son Isaac. Then a long psalm he did, that was all finished, and now he says he came to him a second time, and he said something from him the second time. And he said, myself I have sworn, says Yahweh, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you, to multiply and I will multiply your descendants will be as the stars of the heaven, as the sand which is in the sea, and your descendants may possess the gates of their enemies. In your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed me. So all that now is passed on to Jacob. Now, did Jacob earn it? No more than Abraham earned it. No more than Isaac earned it. It was given. By whose will? By the will of the eternal creator of heaven and earth. And it's his decision making. He's ultimate supreme. No one earthly that came here. And then Isaac said to his son, let people serve thee, and nations bow down to thee. Be Lord over thy brethren, and thy brethren's sons bow down to thee. Cursed everyone that curses thee, and blessed he that blesses thee. Same kind of anger, or same kind of blessing that was passed on, to given to Abraham. Now Isaac passed on now to Jacob. Now, back here, chapter 31 again. I think it's kind of funny. Remember the dream he had, right? That Laban had? Verse 29. And in the power of my hand to do you hurt. This is Laban talking to. I can destroy you. I can wipe you out. I can take everything you've got. Because he was outnumbered by a huge amount. Right? But the Elohim of your father spoke unto me yesterday or last night, saying, take heed that you speak not unto Jacob, neither good nor evil. I mean, good or bad. Now, then, you, thou would these be gone, because you swore, thou swore long after your father's house that has stolen my Elohim, my gods. Now, here's this what Elohim talked about here. Now a curse comes up. But pay attention here a little bit. Remember, Jacob now knows something. What did Laban tell him he did not know? What did Laban just got telling Jacob that Jacob did not know? That he had a dream. What? He had a dream. Huh? Oh, wow. Now, just think about Jacob for a moment. He had a dream. That was my God that told him, if you do anything, good or bad, I'm going to get rid of you, Laban, You're wiped out. You cease to be, and everything you've got is gone. The power for God. Remember what the name of God was during Isaac's time, and Jacob's time, and Abraham's time? What was his name? Shaddai. That's what they called him. What does Shaddai do? Destroys. Destruction. Wipes out. Deluge. You know, they actually had a more healthy fear back in those days than we ever think about today. We make a mockery of the fear of God today. We just think it's a joke. Now, verse 31, and Jacob says, because I was afraid that you would take by force your daughters from me as well as the sons. That's what he was afraid of. That's why he took off. However, now he's getting bold. Verse 38. These 20 years, Jacob says, I have served you. 20 years, verse 41, I have served you, and I have served you 14 years for the two daughters, and 6 years for your cattle, or your herd, and now have charged me, and you've taken wages 10 times. So he's getting kind of bold now. You know, it's kind of funny to hear now. Jacob no longer seems to be afraid anymore because that dream let him know something. Oh, you can't do anything against me, can you? Don't even try. You know, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob was well known, not unknown. He wasn't a mystery. He wasn't one that was hidden in a little tiny corner of the hole and someone picked it up. Oh, that's it. Close the door, quick. And all the others never knew anything about the one who destroyed the world. No, they all know. They all know who destroyed the world. They cannot deny who destroyed the world. They cannot deny Shem was still, I know he died at this particular point in time, but he was still living during this time when Jacob was there with Laban. You think the descendants of Shem forgot the flood? You think Shem forgot the flood? Thinking of Shem's brothers forgot the flood, who may still be alive or may have just died. You know, they're fully aware of what's going on. And that message was not kind of like a dead issue because it doesn't matter anymore. The flood was a very, very important issue in their world. All right? Now, let's go on. In verse 42 here, halfway through it, he says, Elohim had seen my afflictions and labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. Whew. See, now when that dream told him something, right? So you get a feeling that Laban was probably angry but couldn't do anything about it because he feared the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob more than he feared his own. His own little stupid idol. But it had no mouth, had no ears, had no... just something so small it can hide under a woman's bed. I mean, you know, funny, comical. He couldn't do a single thing. All right, let's get back now. They have this little treaty. And Jacob took, verse 45, and Jacob took a stone and set it upon a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap. And they ate thereupon the heap. And Laban called it Jarashahdu. But Jacob called it Gilead. Now why we have where we have Gilead? Things named Gilead. Yes. Oh.
Going back to the thing with Laban, God tells Laban specifically, don't say anything good, don't say anything bad. Now, in your opinion, did Laban break that rule by accusing Jacob and his family of stealing these, as you call them, little household gods? I mean, he, after having this vision from the Lord or this dream from the Lord, he's still pursuing those things.
Correct.
So, in your estimation, did Laban break the command of the Lord in the dream?
Not directly. And Nidreka, we'll get the next chapter, kind of clarifies that just a little bit. I'm glad you asked that question. Because he couldn't do physical harm to him, and he couldn't give physical things to him. He couldn't give him a blessing, physical blessing from anything. Remember what Abraham didn't take the blessings from the king? At least they say, you got your blessings from me. All God was kind of telling Laban, don't even try it. Because Jacob's going to get a blessing from me and not from you. But not in those words, but you understand what I'm saying. The second chapter kind of clarifies a little bit. We want these two chapters together. Yes?
It seems to me that everything that Laban said that seemed to be good in the beginning were all lies anyway. And I believe that it's possible God was addressing that. And he, of course, would not want him to say anything bad. That's my opinion.
When you read the whole chapter, you know, they were bickering back and forth for a long time, arguing. Got nowhere to the conclusion, but they had to come up with this agreement. Kind of like the agreement Abraham had with a particular king. And then Isaac had the same agreement with the king. And here now we have an agreement between Laban and Jacob, quite common. Because, you know, in those days, it meant, I'm going to kill you. I'm just going to steal. I'm going to kill you and your family and everything you have. That's their philosophy in life. That's the way it was. Did not much change. Now, Gilead means rocky region. It also means a witness of a heap of stones. So Gilead got its name from this particular thing that took place. A heap of stone. Now, we don't mean heap. We think like a yard. No, there were specific, so many stones were put there. Each one of those stones had a specific purpose and was built into like an, not like an altar, but similar to one, where you'd have there, and then you would have a meal to cook your food on top of that thing, and the two of you partake of the meal, and you have an agreement. Now, the same thing in Aramaic, when what Laban called it, and all it really means in simplicity is a witness heap, or heap, the heap that is a witness. It's from two verbs. One is to gather, and the other one is to testify. So the first part of the one Laban called, it was means to gather, and that part is to testify. Remember it was that Jacob said, gather stones. So that's what Laban saw. Stones were gathered. So he said, you got her. Gathering stones. And then there was this agreement of witness that witnessed that stone. This evidence, this is the piece of evidence that they were going to have them cook their food on top of. And it became a testimony, that which is a proof. So both words mean the same thing. This one is Aramaic, and that one is not. One is Hebrew. This lets you know that's where the words came from. Witness of a heaping stones, or those stones are witness. They weren't heaped like we think a pile of stones. They were placed for a specific reason and purpose. And they had a meal there, and that meal was the one to do. And later on here, verse 49, it says the mitzvah. This is what Laban said. It's the mitzvah. For he said, Yahoo watched between you and via thee, and when we are absent from one another. Thou shalt not afflict my daughters, and if you take the wife beside my daughters, no man with us, see Elohim is witness between me and you. So they don't have to have men as testimony. Because the heap of stones, or that rock of stones, is a testimony that has there. It wasn't Laban who built the heap of stones. It was Jacob who built them. And it became known as Gilead, or the heap of stones for that particular location. Mitzpah means a watchtower, or observer. As this is the witness between you and I. We don't need any man between us. That's all that word means. All right. It goes into a fascinating word, but I won't do it today. Genesis 22:32. Very fascinating chapter. At the end of last chapter, it says that Laban went on his way. And this one here, verse 1, says, and Jacob went on his way. In Hebrew writing, Hebrew text, that verse is the last verse in the previous chapter. But there's something here. The Melech of Elohim met. And I'm going to read what it says in English here. I mean, in Old English. And when Jacob saw them, plurality, he said, "This is Elohim's host." And he called the name of the place Machathaim. Now, the word host is Machan. And yes, it does mean encampment. It does mean a camp. But it always refers to, throughout the entire Bible, a military camp. An army. Many times you say, the Lord of hosts. The Lord of Machan. That's what it is. Now here, now he changed it. He said name of it. He used the plurality of the word, didn't he? Machanaim. Machanaim is a plurality, and then translated as two camps, two encampments, two armies out there. That's what Jacob saw. And they met him. Now, what do you think was going through Jacob's mind? What's going through your mind? What did you see? Why did God have these two armies presented before Jacob? What was he trying to show Jacob? What was he trying to tell Jacob? You have no idea. The Lord is with them by full military power and might. That's pretty strong, isn't it? Jacob didn't have an army. Right? Now, this story goes on. Of course, now he sees something or understood something from these two encampments, these two armies. Pay attention. He saw his brother. He sent message. He saw his brother in the land of Seir, in the country of Edom. And of course, we know, sirs, I have sent to tell my Lord that my find grace in your sight, and so on and so forth. But the messengers came back, and he came back, and he said, "What? There are 400 men with him," and that is means men. Now, what was Jacob's response? What? He was afraid. So what did he do? He broke up his camp into two separate camps. Did you see the picture? One camp was going to be protected by that group of Elohim angels, and that one's going to be protected by that group of Elohim angels. Separate your camp. We had to say, divide and conquer. God divided, then conquered Esau. It was just a guy, Esau, didn't know what was happening. Two flanks come in, and spiritually speaking, and we have now a problem. There are two bands. And he says, well, he might smite one of them, but the other one will be safe. So we know about that story. Now, first thing Jacob saw or said that he was not worthy. I got to listen to this prayer. Verse 9, listen to the prayer. If you haven't listened to it, I want you to listen to it very carefully. Very, very important prayer. Jacob said, "O Elohim of my father Abraham, and Elohim of my father Isaac, Yahuwah, which said unto me, return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee." Next statement, very powerful. "I am not worthy of the least or the lowest favor, the least favor that you have. And all the truth which you have shown me, shown unto your servant. For with my staff I pass over Jordan, and now I am becoming two bands." I'm being divided. Talk about a man supplicating, in a sense, begging, asking God to protect, call upon this army you over here, this encampment and that encampment, protect my band, protect my family. I'll stay on the other side. Because actually Esau was after Jacob, not his family. Okay? Now, one thing that he knew, 400 men are going to come. And he knew, and he asked, verse 11, deliver me. The odds are way, way against me. I'm not worthy of you delivering me. I'm not one that should be worthy of receiving the lowest favor you could ever put upon a person. But he said, deliver me, I pray you, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him. Now this is the man who had two major fears coming, right? Laban was one of them. Ran for his life and land and tried to spare, keep the life of his kids, his daughters. And Laban came to do harm. God says, you do, and you're finished. Right? Now, here comes this other one. There comes Esau. 400 men. Now, back in those days, you had 400 men. They weren't 400 cowboys. They were armed men, ready to do battle. All right. And he said, he beseeched Elohim, and told Elohim, you said you were going to do this. Verse 12, and you said, I will surely do thee good and make thy seed as the sea, sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. All Jacob saw was a wipeout. You say, well, he lacks faith, right? No, no, no. He has to be building faith. Faith has to be built. Every time a tremendous amount of fear came upon this man, he became stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger. A lot of things happened in his world. He mentioned it at his old age. There are more evil things that have happened to me than good. And we see some of these things that's happening, right? He says, and he lodged the night, he stayed there. We won't go through all the camels and what he gave Rob, what names mean certain things. Let's drop all the way down now to verse 24. Almost finished, because this chapter is very short. And he said, Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled with a man with him until the breaking of the day. Pay attention to that statement. Until the breaking of the day. I'm not going to go into this kind of Jewish philosophy. I'm not going to go there. Read what it says. All right? But I'm going to be clarified as I go through this. Verse 25, and when he, the man, saw that he, the man, prevailed, was not able to gain, not able to accomplish, not able to endure, not able to reach that point against him, Jacob, he, the man, touched the hollows of his thigh, and the hollow of thighs, Jacob's thigh was out of joint. And he, the man, wrestled with him, kept on wrestling with him. How long was he supposed to wrestle with him? Until the breaking of day. And remember, it was a man. Now, I'll keep clear of what I'm saying. We have, and we know that God is stronger than man. We also know that angels can be stronger than man. But when an order comes down from Elohim, you will not be stronger than this person. That angelic being will obey. If you believe it's an angel, fine. But he could not and would not, and he set his will not to go beyond what God said. Do not go. Do not become stronger than him. Okay? We'll keep on going. Now, for a moment, I want you to keep that in mind because it's an interesting word. And you look it up in Hebrew, and it says, the man, verse 26. And he, the man, said, let me go, for the day breaks. He had a deadline. He had a point. He had to finish a battle, had a must continue until the day breaks or begins to dawn. And he said, I will not let you go except you bless me. Weird statement, right? And he, the man, said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, my name is Jacob. And he, the man, said, thy name shall not be called Jacob anymore, but Israel. I'll read what it says here in English. For as a prince thou hast power with Elohim and with men, and has prevailed, has the ability to gain, the ability to accomplish, the ability to endure, the ability to reach. That's what prevail means in Hebrew. The ability to gain, the ability to accomplish, the ability to endure, the ability to reach. So what do you think the test was about? To see if he can endure all night long. All in the Hoseth. The darkness. Can you prevail in darkness? Yes or no? Okay. So now we have here this thing of prevail. Now let's take a look at the name of Israel. A lot of different people have a lot of different terminations. And yes, it can be Yisrael, mean man sees God. Can mean that because you can break those words down. I'm going to tell you what the basic doesn't really come from that word. That's just someone's thought about it. I don't disagree with it. But his name really means, and it says here, I'm reading in English again, for as a prince thou hast power with Elohim. In Hebrew it says, he, Jacob, will rule as Elohim. Wow! Did anybody else ever rule like Elohim? What did God say to Moses? I'll make you as me. You will be like me. Pretty powerful, right? So now we have Jacob. He had to learn to endure. You ever had to have prevalence? You ever had to have endure anything? You ever had to be challenged by God with anything in your life? By the way, it's always not in the bright daylight. It's always in the darkest time of the trial. Trials are always dark, difficult, hard to get through, hard to pass through. You don't see the breaking of the trial until it reaches its point where Elohim says, now the breaking of day comes. Daniel has something to say.
Looking through, as you're going through this again, it looks to me as if Jacob was creating or fulfilling the prophecy that was going to occur throughout all of Israel. Because in Israel itself, by Jacob dividing up his family, he was prophesying that you will be divided, meaning all my descendants be divided, the southern half and the northern half be divided. And you will struggle with God, and you will be in great pain, great endurance. However, you will prevail as a people in spite of the fact you're being divided in your future.
Right, and now, go back and forth, because in Jacob's trouble does not come in the nice, wonderful daylight time. It comes in the Hoseth of time, the darkness of time, the evil of times, the wickedness of times. And when you get this together, you'll finally figure out what Jacob said in his old age. All my life it has been more evil than good. Prevailing, fighting. I would say Jacob was a hero. A powerful warrior. And what it says there, a prince, a suitor, a leader of men. He didn't have an army. He was a leader of men. And he comes along and he says, wow, that's really fantastic. You ever thought about Jacob that way?
That kind of reminds me of what Daniel was saying about the scripture in the Brit Hadashah about if you endure to the end,
yes,
you shall be saved.
Now that word we're using with Israel, it starts with the ish, Israel. Israel is the same thing. We have the word Sarah from this word. Remember Sarah? Remember who she was? All right. And it comes from this Hebrew word, and then Sarah, which means to prevail, as power, like a prince. Authority as a ruler. Authority as what? That's what the verb means. So now we get into his name of Israel, you begin to realize, oh, he is going to really rule as a prince, as God rules. Now, in the kingdom of God, when it comes, and who will be at the gates? To let you in, and you may go to the Lord and find out what he has to say. The house of Israel. They'll make a decision whether you go through the gates to see the Lord. What it says, let us go up to the blank of what? Who? Let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, the house of God, the house of Jacob. So this is a prophecy, like Daniel said. It's a prophecy that's going to have a way deep in the future. But long before any of this happens, Israel, the house of Israel, the one that will rule as a prince, one that rules as Elohim, has to go through a Hoshech. A hard times. And it becomes ours. It is our trouble. It's not somebody else's. If you are joined to Jacob, you're joined to the house of Israel, one way or the other, makes no difference. Guess what? It is your trial. It is your trouble. It is you who are now prevailing. It is you who are now having to overcome. It is you now that has to know you have to fight. And God sets up the battle. Remember, it is God who set the battle up with Jacob. It wasn't some enemy. It wasn't somebody who Jacob just said it was a man. But we don't know who he was, quote, end of quote. Don't worry about that. But all of a sudden, which he's challenged with an unbelievable odds. He has nobody. He was all alone. All his men that he had with, he sent them away, right? Run down there, tell Esau all this kind of stuff. And he said all his servants, all his wonderful things he had. And Jacob didn't have an army. What did he do with his wife and his kids? Separated them. And he went back over the creek, went over back over the river. Now, I'm going back a little over the river because he probably knew he had to face this person. Why? Dream. You understand what I'm saying today? Hope this is kind of interesting because my goal in the book of Genesis is really make it real, make it true, make it something that you can don't have to try to super analyze, but just take a look at it. That's what it says. Can you accept it? All right. And then he said there, verse 30, and Jacob called the place Peniel, which means, basically, the face of Elohim. Doesn't mean he saw him face to face. He was confronted. That Hebrew phrase, face to face, doesn't mean like we think it means face to face. Now, I'm looking at your face, you're looking at my face. Oh, I am confronted with God, and God is confronting with me. Bambo, we have Bambo, we're hitting. Bambo, we are at war with one another in a sense. Do you not know what Apostle Paul said? We are enmities with God. We are at war with God. Now, you and I, if we really understand that we are at war with the Creator of heaven and earth, and we have not been wiped off the face of the earth, then you probably should ask him, okay, bless me. I'm losing. You hurt me. I can't walk anymore. I can't walk anymore. Would you at least bless me? I need something from you. I got nothing else going for me. Right? So in a sense, when Israel, the house of Israel, will suffer very, very greatly in the near future. But this is a prophecy, and when it's finished, when the breaking of day comes, what will that day be? Well, the whole world will see the eye of the coming of the Messiah as if it's coming from the east to the west. The light will come. The world's still in Hoshech, still in darkness. May we have the blessings of God that we may be able to see and understand.